You're listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast series.
Perspectives on an Intellectual Career with Robert Mayhew. This lecture was recorded as part of Ayn Rand Conference Global's How to Put a Dent in the Universe, a conference examining an intellectual's role in society and how it can shape the world.
Okay, I became interested in ideas, and specifically political ideas, when in my early teens I started reading dystopian novels. So 1984, Brave New World, We, and of course, Ayn Rand's Anthem. I was also reading critical accounts of the Soviet Union. And that made me, I became this a staunch anti-communist very early. I also read a lot about religion and especially Christianity, though not sufficiently critically, at least at first. So those were my main interests in the realm of ideas through to the end of high school. And by then, I'd also read The Fountainhead, but I'd not read Atlas Shrugged, nor any of the non-fiction. Only when I was well into college did I fully realize that you could actually aim to be an intellectual, or that I could do that. That would not have been the terms I used. It would be something like I could be a professor, you know, in the realm of ideas or something along those lines. And since my main interest in the realm of ideas was politics, as an undergraduate, after spending a couple of years not knowing what I wanted to do, I eventually majored in political theory and I minored in philosophy. Now, there was a pretty big gap between reading Anthem in my early teens and reading Atlas Shrugged as an undergraduate. And when I read Atlas for the first time, I was really into the novel, so much so that I barely noticed, I mean, I absorbed a lot of the ideas, of course, and they intrigued me and I regarded them as important, but I barely noticed, and this is important given, you know, where I ended up, I barely noticed the occasional references to Aristotle. But the second time I read the novel, a few months later, these references really caught my attention. You know, he's described as the greatest of your philosophers and our teacher's first teacher. And Ayn Rand in the afterword, which I actually read this time, she says that the only philosophical debt she can acknowledge is to Aristotle. And that really intrigued me. Now, after reading Atlas Shrugged that second time, only then did I turn to the systematic reading of Ayn Rand's nonfiction. And so I eventually encountered For the New Intellectual. Now, the title essay I found was this brilliant tour de force presentation of an essential thread running through the history of Western thought. And again, there was more intriguing stuff about Aristotle. Aristotle's philosophy was the intellect's declaration of independence. And it actually contains what is still my favorite quote by anyone about Aristotle, which I won't take the time to read, but it's the one that ends, "Never have so many owed so much to one man." I should mention, hopefully it's obvious, but if not, that I read her critically. That is, and I read, for instance, for the New Intellectual critically. There was one line in For the New Intellectual about Aristotle that I did not agree with because it flew in the face of what I'd heard in lectures and read about the history of philosophy. And it gnawed at me, and this continued through grad school and even beyond that. So much so that I eventually devoted a fair amount of research to this, and that culminated in a pair of lectures that I gave on Aristotle and the Renaissance. And I came to see that she was right and everyone else, a lot of the other people were wrong. Now, in my last year as an undergraduate, I took Leonard Peikoff's two courses on the history of philosophy, and that really solidified my desire to do further work in that field. And again, I was still continuing with Aristotle in the background though, with my main interest was in the history of political thought. So I went to graduate school, this is at Georgetown University. I graduated from University of Maryland as an undergraduate went to grad school at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., planning to work on John Locke and the Founding Fathers. But like I said, Aristotle was there all the time in the background. And beyond him, my interest in ancient Greek thought and culture generally grew. And eventually I decided to do something that I think would be impossible today. That is, I stayed at Georgetown. I started taking courses in ancient Greek language, right, from the classics department. And then after I got my master's degree in politics, I switched departments. I mean, I could just jump from politics to the philosophy department. And there I focused on ancient philosophy. And I eventually ended up writing a PhD dissertation on Aristotle's politics. Now, I should mention that around the time I graduated from college in 1983 and got my master's degree in 85, I went to the first two big objectivist conferences in 83, summers of 83 and 80 and 85. Now, these were wonderful because at the time, if you're young, you're going to wonder whether a time existed. There was no internet. There was no ARI. There was no HBL. That's Harry Binswanger letter, et cetera, right? There was not a lot of evidence. There were courses you could take here and there, but there was not a lot of evidence around that there were a lot of people interested in Ayn Rand's ideas. So these conferences were they were long 16-day conferences. I can't imagine that now, but at the time it was really wonderful. And they were very important to me in my development. Moreover, it was at these conferences that I met the woman I ended up marrying. And that's something to keep in mind, a good reason to go to conferences if you're single. Anyway, what else? Oh, here's one cautionary tale I'll tell. By 1983, when I graduated from the University of Maryland, I was really into Ayn Rand. And I told myself, going forward, I will have a Rourke-like focus on my career. I wouldn't dream of getting married or starting a family or any of that stuff, right? Not until I have my PhD and preferably a job. That's 1983. Fast forward to April 1991, I'm sweating bullets to finish my dissertation because my wife is pregnant with our first child and due any day, and I was told that newborns could be time-consuming. So the point is, fortunately, I discovered in time that pseudo-objectivist principles based on a misreading of the Fountainhead do not trump reality and one's pursuit of genuine values. Anyway, after finishing my coursework in grad school, I lived in the Netherlands from 1987 to 1991. My wife is Dutch, and I could prepare for my comprehensive exams and write my dissertation anywhere, and so I did. And it was during this period, though, that ARI was just starting to give the kinds of courses that would eventually develop into what is now the OAC program. But I missed out on most of those, first because I was in Europe and working on my dissertation. And then when I was back in the US, I was focused on teaching at Georgetown and then trying to get a tenure track job. However, I was able to sit in on a number of classes that Dr. Peikoff and Dr. Binswanger gave, either in a couple cases live, but mostly via the phone. And that helped me to keep up with and improve my knowledge of objectivism. And it was also around this time that Dr. Peikoff's book, Objectivism, the Philosophy of Ayn Rand, appeared. And that book, and I would mention that the book in combination with the two intensive seminars that he gave on it were, of course, invaluable. Now, I didn't get a tenure track job right away. And so for you people thinking about an academia, you have to, I think it was Tara said, you have to have a thick skin. Or Brad, that is, things don't always go smoothly. I mean, I didn't get a tenure track job right away, but I did get a visiting position eventually at Virginia Tech. And after 2 years there, that last year, I'm beginning to get worried. I've been on the job market for 3 years or so. And that I had 8 interviews that year, and those 8 interviews led to 2 on-campus visits, and that led to 1 job offer. And that offer was from Seton Hall, where I've been teaching for over 25 years now. So it all worked out, and I don't like to dwell on what if I didn't have that one offer, what would have happened then? Now, I should mention that I regard myself as an historian of ancient philosophy more than I do a philosopher. I like writing about and teaching ancient philosophy and culture most of all. Maybe I should say, since people have been evaluating these two, I like teaching and I love research and writing in ancient philosophy most of all, and in all areas. I mean, like at the moment, for example, I wake up in the morning, not quite as early as Brad, but close. And given my projects at the moment, I spend at least an hour and no more than two translating Aristotle's Eudemian Ethics. And then I have a paper on Aristotle on the Odyssey for a conference in Rome, and I have to devote at least 2 hours to that. So I love it, right? Now, and it's been that way from the beginning. Nevertheless, although my main interest is in ancient philosophy, I knew early on, I also wanted, if possible, to spend whatever time I could working on Ayn Rand. Not out of any kind of duty to the cause, but because I love the idea of doing scholarly work on her as well, right? So when I heard in the early 90s that there was unpublished material of hers in the archives, I asked Dr. Peikoff if I could prepare some of it for publication. And in 93, this was at an Objectivist conference in 1993. It was the first conference where I was actually a teacher. We went for a long walk and it was kind of a job interview. And as a result, I ended up working on Ayn Rand's Marginalia, and that was published in 1995. And he was very pleased by that, you know, I asked him about it in 93 and the book appeared in 95. And so, you know, he actually said, you do things. And yeah, okay. So he trusted me to take on another project. And so I edited the nonfiction writing course that's been mentioned a couple times. And then after that, I edited a book on Ayn Rand's Q&A, her question and answer periods from numerous talks she gave. And then years after that, I edited a previously unpublished play of hers called The Unconquered. Now, after the Q&A book, I edited collections of essays on, you know, one on each of her four main works of fiction. And that was really challenging, particularly finding, you know, an academic press that was interested in publishing on Ayn Rand. But it was also, all of this was very rewarding. And what I found, again, through this all, is that I enjoy my work, I enjoy my life best when I have, in addition to all of my ancient Greek philosophy projects, at least one project connected to Ayn Rand and Objectivism. I'm now in transition. I have a number of ancient Greek projects, but I'm trying to get going on another Ayn Rand project. I'm not quite sure what will come of that. Now, I want to underscore a point that Tara Smith made. An academic has an incredible amount of freedom in what is open to you, you know, to want to teach and to do research on. Lately, I've taken an interest in the lost works of Aristotle and the works of Aristotle's students and his later followers. And I was able to do this merely because I wanted to and that it interested me. But there's also freedom in another sense, in that you have around 3 months in the summer and a month in the winter where you have no teaching or other academic duties. And there are sabbaticals. I'm in the middle of a year-long sabbatical. It's wonderful. I mention this because I know the job market in the humanities and social sciences is horrible and likely will be for the foreseeable future. And there are other problems with academia. But if you can get into an excellent, that is a highly rated graduate program, and you love the idea of being an academic, do give some thought to actually pursuing that path, right? If this is the sort of life that interests you. As I said, I think it's a wonderful life. And in fact, I'm doubly blessed because I'm an academic, married to an academic. So we have all this free time for travel, which we love. Now, as I said, there is a downside to academia, especially in the humanities and social sciences. They are descending at an alarming rate, both their content and related to that, their conception of what academic discourse is supposed to be. I'm most aware of this in the field of classics. Because of the freedom I mentioned, I've gradually, in effect, become as much of a classicist as I am a professor of philosophy. I have a foot in each field, right? And though I love it, and there are really good people in the field of in this field, classics is committing suicide. The new intellectuals in this field are not the ones Ayn Rand was calling for. Certainly, the most outspoken young ones have pretty much declared that the very idea of ancient Greek and Roman culture, and in fact of Western civilization itself, is a racist myth. A recent article declares, if classics doesn't change, let it burn. And I think for a lot of these people, the burning is in effect their motive. Incidentally, in case you might think otherwise, classics, the various area studies, English, sociology, political science, they are all way worse than philosophy. Anyway, I think I'm running out of time or past it, so I'll just end by saying that I mentioned this this downside to underscore the need for the right kind of new intellectual. Now, you shouldn't try to become one out of duty, of course. I believe Dr. Peikoff once reported that when faced with some kind of professional decision, Ayn Rand told him, ask not what you can do for objectivism, ask what objectivism can do for you. And I think that should be the way you look at your career if you're considering being an intellectual. But if you love the idea of being an academic and you're up for a good fight, you are sorely needed. And of course, I think, though, as these two panels are making very clear, this is not the only rewarding way of being an intellectual, but it is one way, and it's a good one. And I think I'll leave it at that.
Thanks for listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. You can also find us on YouTube. If you like this content, please share or leave us a review. For more information, go to AynRand.org.